Mr. Davis, uphill.
Committee will please come to order. I would, oh, that's okay. I think I can handle it all. I thank you very much for those of you who are observers or people who have come to testify. Like to announce that those of you who are going to testify on committee substitute for Senate Bill 96 will be heard first, and we'll deal with that bill first, and then we'll deal with a House Bill 192, which is an act relating to protection of the elderly at a work session. We will not take testimony during that time. We will ask the sponsor of the bill to come in and work with us on that, but we will not take testimony on that unless it is already been cleared. So, because this will be a work session only, there are comments we will be received. Thank you. For the minutes or the record, let it be known that Representative Chris, Miller, Kopanen, and Tischer are present. Representative Keo is ill and has to be excused, and I understand that Representative Gall is also ill. So we can proceed then. I'd like to remind those who have come to testify when they come to the table that they should please state their name and their affiliation, if any. And I'll give it back to you. For committee substitute for Senate Bill 96, we will hear Dr. LeBeau.
I'm Dr. Stuart Rabeau, and I represent the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'll be extremely brief. The department is in favor of this committee substitute for Senate Bill 96, which is to cause a delete and add supplement of $250,000. The funds will come from surplus funds and permanent fund hold harmless funds within the department. If I may deviate from written testimony, can I urge that this bill be, if the committee moves it on as fast as possible. I'm already betting on the come and expending dollars from programs now that I have to replace. If I don't, I'll have no public health nurses traveling or any laboratory tests done very shortly, because we've already, I wanted to get this program underway before breakup. We've already gone out into the lower Yukon-Kuskokwim area and have started the program. And what I was saying is I have pulled monies that are allocated for other existing programs to get this program underway with. I thought it was a reasonably assured thing. It's only because I felt that way. This has the support of the governor and, as far as I know, the legislature. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Doctor. Other questions from the committee? Before the record, I would like to establish a conversation, if you will, about line 18, page 1 of the bill. Just for the record, it's been explained to us off the record, but that line says that there will be the appropriation comes from Senate Bill 842, providing for permanent fund dividends. And the language of that doesn't indicate that there is a section called hold harmless or relates to hold harmless or anything like that. The general public's perception of anything coming out of their money, if you will, is a very wrong perception. I would not want the public to think that the governor is inviting a problem by dipping into the funds that the public thinks they're supposed to get. So could you clarify that for us to make sure that, for the record, there is no problem there?
Yes, ma'am. These are funds that were appropriated to the department for public assistance to replace for recipients of public assistance to replace the funds that they were losing because of the fact that they received a $1,000 dividend. It is my understanding that this amount of money that was appropriated that you read alluded to was more than adequate, and that there is a little over $2 million surplus, of which this $250,000 is to come from. And it's also my understanding that the governor then has reprogrammed practically all the rest of that for other supplemental activities, which I think have come or come before the legislature.
Thank you very much for that clarification, Doctor. Are there any other questions then of the committee members? Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Doctor, did you?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Is there any discussion from the members of the committee on this bill? I did not announce before we started hearing this any intent of the chair to hold it or for the consideration of those members who are not here, nor did I suggest that we're going to move it out. But if there is a consensus of the committee, I have no objections to dealing with the bill today. Mr. Copen has no problem. Are you just saying that you're willing to move it out?
Certainly.
Do you have your recommendation?
We've discussed this bill. If you want
certainly.
To close to it, you may have time.
We did pass out the resolution, and I myself don't see any problem. In that case, I would entertain a motion to move out Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 96.
Chairman, would it be appropriate for me to testify at this time and
I have another committee meeting, as you know, and I sort of developed some proposed amendments or agreements or disagreements with proposed amendments, and if it's appropriate, I could maybe run through those for the committee.
Surely.
And then obviously
happy to hear that.
Later discussion, but if that procedure is appropriate. For the record, my name is Representative Don Foxman, and I'm here today testifying in favor of House Bill 192 relating to protection of the elderly.
Excuse me, Representative Foxman, may I interrupt you to note that, for the record, that Representative Davis has arrived. I'm sorry, already.
I was not present for all the testimony on this legislation, but based on discussions with your staff and my staff and others, I think I've hit most of the proposed amendments and will be commenting. I may skip some, in which case, obviously, maybe we can deal with those later. But if you have a copy of House Bill 192, I'll make page and line references here, if you'll follow through. So I understand there have been no proposed changes in page one of the bill, so if you look at page two of the bill, page two, line two, a proposal to delete employees on that line, I support, so that the provision would read an administrator of a nursing home, residential care, or health care facility. The effect of that amendment would be to eliminate basically non-professional employees, because all the professional employees of a nursing home are already picked up in other items within this list, the doctor, the nurse, the social worker, so on. So I would support deleting the term or employee on line two. There are three additional subparagraphs. This would be page two, line 11, basically adding an 11, 12, and 13. One of those would add village public safety officers, and I support that. And again, we can provide the language if the staff needs it. It's pretty straightforward. Adding village public safety officers, I support. Adding emergency medical technicians or mobile intensive care paramedics. Discuss that with people at emergency medical services, and they believe that that's appropriate, and since some of them are willing to be added, it
what's
seems appropriate. It would be emergency medical technician or mobile intensive care paramedics. And then the third addition, Madam Chairman, would be to add persons who are providing assistance through a homemaker or home health aid program.
Could that not be under, together with line 6, item 7, does the village health aid or home health aid perhaps rather make a separate item?
It'd be fine. Technically, it doesn't make a lot of difference, except they are different programs. A homemaker program and a home health aid program is different than what village health aids do, but technical, I don't, it doesn't make much difference.
Can I interrupt you again?
Sure.
Are you finished with that portion?
I am finished with that subsection, yes.
I, myself, and by the way, for those members, I think that I appreciate this as being a work session, so if you have questions to direct at Representative Clarkson, please feel free to do that one at a time. I don't have to go through the chair, as long as you don't carry on the conversation for a half an hour. But on, if I will, on line 4, the word conservator, and I looked that up, and as it relates to the meaning, and most everything else you have listed on this, from 1 through 10, deals with rather professional persons. And then we're getting down to a guardian or conservator, and I wondered if your intent was to keep it as professional as possible, or certainly the guardian be the closest individual. But then the conservator as well as that, perhaps could you give us your intent?
As I understand what's meant by the term conservator, it's a person who is appointed by a court for the purpose of handling a person's property. The reason for making them report abuse is because of their closer relationship with an elderly person, not particularly because of their professionalism. That's very often a member of the family. But it's because they have a sort of a statutory responsibility to take care of that person or that person's property. And it's that sort of special relationship that justifies, I think, having them having this obligation imposed on
them. I just looked the word up in the dictionary and it didn't talk in legal terms.
Right. There is a procedure in the statute for the appointment of a conservator, which is similar to a guardian, except most of the property. If there are no questions on the specific point of whether of people to be added or deleted from the list, I'd like to go on. Page 3, line 1.
In prior testimony, we had someone was going to add a physician's assistant. And I don't know, as long as we're on that list, probably we should include it or talk about it anyway.
Wouldn't that be covered under health, a licensed healthcare provider, physician's assistant?
That would be my intention. I believe physician's assistants should have to report elder abuse. So if there's any question in the committee's mind, I would support adding physician's assistant. I think they're in the language that the chairman refers to.
On page 1, line 27,
right.
A physician or other licensed healthcare provider would take care of the physician's assistant, I should think.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, thank you.
On page 3, the top of the page, there are conforming amendments. If you choose to add village public safety officer, that subsection, subsection E, needs to build in the same reference. It's where you have to report harm to a police officer as defined in 292 or a village public safety officer. On page 3, line 13, there was testimony, I think it was in this committee, I have to admit, Madam Chairman, I'm getting a little confused about testimony in the Senate, because this bill is being considered almost simultaneously in the Senate, but I think it was in this committee, there was testimony about that being somewhat of a loophole and undesirable, and I agree with that. You should eliminate the requirement, or I support eliminating the requirement of reasonable effort.
What line?
This is line, starting at line 13, page 3. And having language that, frankly, would be similar to what is in the proposed Senate version of this bill, and if I can read that sentence as it would be changed, it may give you the idea. As it would be changed, the sentence would be, the department shall personally interview the elderly person during the investigation unless the person is unconscious or otherwise physically or mentally impaired to such an extent as to be unable to respond to questions. So you basically don't leave as much discretion with the department not to interview the senior citizen. In as many cases as possible, you should interview the person who is a victim, obviously. And there's some indication that the language I had originally drafted is too loose. So I would support that sort of change. The next change, then, is on page 5, on line 1. Actually, the sentence begins on page 4 at the bottom of the page. This is the disclosure by the department of verified reports of harm that occur at an institution for care of the elderly. I would support testimony which indicates that the language should be deleted on page 5, line 1, so that you would delete that is certified by the state. And again, the purpose of this section is that if I want to put my grandmother in a nursing home, I want to know whether or not that nursing home has had 10 verified complaints of elderly abuse that have occurred in that nursing home or some other facility. The period would come at the end of the sentence on page 4, line 29.
So you wouldn't be concerned then with whether the facility was certified or the institution was certified by the state. It just wouldn't make any difference. You could go ahead and investigate anything.
I agree. Yes, that would be my position. Then, Madam Chairman, on page 5, line 10, the question of privilege. As you probably know, there is a patient-physician privilege and a psychotherapist patient privilege. that privilege is designed to make the communication between doctor and patient confidential, and that prohibits a doctor from releasing or reviewing or releasing information about that intimate relationship. The Senate has deleted that section completely, which would mean that the existing privilege would continue. I am concerned about that because I think that we need to waive the privilege so that the doctor has the authority to report to the department that there has been elderly abuse. Seems to me you sort of get the effectiveness of the legislation if the doctor may not report it because of the privilege. However, it's important not to waive the privilege completely because you don't want to open up all of that person's medical files. So I would propose language roughly as follows instead of the language in section 075. The language should read something to the effect, the physician-patient privilege and the psychotherapist-patient privilege are waived to the extent that AS 47-24-010 and 020 require reporting by certain professionals of abuse, neglect, or abandonment. So the privilege would be waived only for the purpose of reporting the abuse. And again, maybe Dr. Fritz can see if I've sort of addressed the problem that I see.
Representative Clarkson, excuse me, Dr. Lee, in the comment.
No, ma'am.
How does that paraphrase or compare or parallel, if at all, with the existing child abuse law that says people must report child abuse now?
We have just, frankly, based on some discussions my staff has had, we just started checking on that and are concerned, in fact, that some information does not, as I understand it, exist in the child abuse reporting statute, and in fact some people do hesitate to file child abuse complaints because of a lack of waiver of the privilege. Now I'm really speaking off the top of my head because we haven't completed that investigation, but my staff talked to a psychotherapist, for example, this morning, who said that as far as he knew there was no waiver of the privilege for child abuse, and that he always had a dilemma when he saw a child abuse situation. That may not be entirely accurate, and again, maybe Dr. Fritz can respond, but I believe that there is no similar provision waiving the privilege in the child abuse statute. I guess my response to that would be is there ought to be, and therefore we shouldn't make ours just like the child abuse statute. Any other questions on that provision?
Mr. Clarkson, not a question particularly, but
great believer in uniformity. If my only concern is that let's not pass a bill that is going to put the doctor in a bind because the doctor has not had his privilege waived and he feels like he can't release the information.
I would assure you that doctor.
We just don't want to do that.
To take care of that for us. Thank you.
The next change is on page 5, line 22. There are two proposed changes to the definition of abuse. The first would be on line 23, actually, following the word anguish, insert the words requiring medical treatment. The concern, as I understand it, in testimony was that mental anguish is pretty difficult to document, and what we're really trying to address here is a person who has a demonstrable physical problem of some sort, and I think if you add that additional language after anguish, you've solved that problem. There is a second suggestion in that section on that same line 23, the proposal is to delete the words "by a caretaker." And I would support that for fairly obvious reasons. Often the services are not deprived. The person isn't harmed by the caretaker. It may be some third party. So we want to make the definition broad enough to cover the types of abuse we're trying to address. So those two changes in the definition of abuse. Any questions on that definition?
I was looking at line 24, Mr. Carson, the word mental health, the words mental health next same item number two.
Well, I looked at that after I spoke with you briefly, Madam Chairman, and I thought that if you change the language on line 23, you've taken care of it. Now, that may not necessarily be the case. Again, the intent, maybe this is guidance to staff or whoever, but the intent of the legislation is that abuse be considered something that has a physically demonstrable nature. So you can see whether it's mental abuse that has ended up in requiring medical treatment, or whether it's obviously physical abuse. We need to have a sort of an objective standard to show that it's abuse. If the determination is that some amendment on line 24 is necessary, I have no objection to it as long as that main intent of the legislation is kept.
Madam Chairman, there was, at least in prior testimony, someone indicated that under deprivation, was stated willful deprivation.
Yeah. I was going to get to that in a second.
I didn't know what the comments were by the witness. But also, I'd like for him to restate his proposed amendment to after anguish.
After anguish, insert three words, requiring medical treatment.
Going back to here a few lines after we back up to 10-11 after we touched on physician patient, we didn't touch on husband wife privileges. Did you want to strike those?
The reason is that there is, and it's a very complicated area because there are some court rules involved and some other statutes. As I understand the husband wife privilege, that privilege is waived already by court rule with regard to crimes between the two. That is, if husband beats up wife, wife goes to the doctor, well, it isn't a doctor privilege. The wife obviously can have admitted in evidence in a trial evidence of the fact that the husband beat her up. So I think that's already taken care of. Now, I'm still having my staff check on that, and we're sort of writing it out with some people about what the existing law is, but I think that's covered.
Go ahead, Mike.
I have another question that I'm sure you've researched that, Don, and that's just the whole definition of abuse requiring medical treatment. I guess some problems with that. If someone slugs X, but doesn't require medical treatment, they just got a few black and blue marks. I just wonder if we need to put require medical treatment on that.
The intent would be that the three words requiring medical treatment would only relate to mental anguish. I agree with you that we shouldn't require that someone actually show a bruise or a broken bone before we require reporting of that abuse. So that would not modify physical pain or injury, but only the question of mental anguish. I mean, I could get real upset if somebody shouts loudly at me, but is that elder abuse? I would contend not for purposes of this legislation. And again, I'm not tied to my language. As long as something reflects the basic intent, which is that we have a demonstrable standard so you can clearly say what's abuse and what's not abuse. Okay. I'm not concerned.
I didn't understand that. When you said that require medical treatment, I didn't know that was tied with mental anguish. Yeah, I understand.
We might want to rework
the column. Just take the column off of anguish and put it in the treatment.
You've got physical pain as being a phrase, and it's...
Yeah, okay, I understand that. I just thought it covered the whole phrase, but...
Fine, I just wasn't...
And a letter of intent may be appropriate, or however you...
If it's written properly with proper punctuation, I would hope that wouldn't be...
Hopefully, that's right. Final amendment that I support is on page 6, line 10. This would be the deletion of the language by an elderly person or. And again, you received testimony on this, and I think that testimony was right on point. There's no reason to have that in there. The neglect could be by any person. In this case, however, I think you probably ought to leave the caretaker language in, because abuse by anyone ought to be covered, but neglect only by someone who has sort of a responsibility for that. I mean, if I walk by a senior citizen on the street and don't give her a ride in my car, it may be argued to be neglect, but I'm not a responsible person. So I'm not sure that you want to expand it that broadly. But certainly you should delete the language failure by an elderly person. Those are the amendments I support. There are two other amendments that have been discussed, either here or on the Senate Health Committee. The first is the question of putting willful in on page 5, line 23. I am opposed to that, and the reason, just briefly, is that this is a definition for purpose of determining whether a person is going to report the harm, not whether a person is going to be convicted of a crime. I think adding the word willful imposes a burden on someone that's unnecessary. For example, a doctor, you're sitting in the room, your patient has clearly suffered injuries, she is an elderly person, has suffered injuries. You should not have to go through the mental exercise of figuring out whether that's willful or not before you report the violence. That is a criminal question, a prosecutorial or jury question. Not appropriate in deciding whether you're going to report it. We should clearly report all of those without having to make that decision. So I don't support adding willful on page 5, line 23. The only other issue is, I'm sorry, I don't remember if it was raised here or in the Senate committee.
Well, you're still there, excuse me.
Okay.
On your after mental anguish, wouldn't it be better to put that require medical treatment rather than mental anguish requiring mental
anguish that requires medical treatment or
right.
Some such.
Wouldn't that be more explicit?
That might be, or even some different way of wording it. Back on the abuse definition.
Perhaps we can talk to the drafters.
Yeah, I think if you just explain the intent of the drafters, they could put it together so that there wouldn't be any misunderstanding.
As long as we're back on that again, although I can see the arguments for not putting that willful in a legal sense, let me just give you a couple of examples and ask you to see whether or not you might find it difficult to deal with a constant barrage of complaints, if you will, on something that could be classified as not maintaining the mental health and so forth. A couple of these kind of kick things around to try to see if we could test it out. I've dealt with elderly people for some time, of course, my parents were old. And anyone who is not well, if you will, has an ailment, has an intense desire to feel better all the time, and that desire usually means psychological support. If my mother were in a rest home, convalescent home, and nobody went to see her for about a month and a half, and she became accustomed to having visitors every other day or something like that, that could be classified in her mind, or in the minds of her friends, or even the staff at that institution, because of the regularity that was occurring prior to that time, all of a sudden she's not getting visitors. So she's mentally anguished. How would you deal with that with this law in place?
There's two things that happen.
Abandonment, if you will.
Right. There's two things that happen after a report is given. Three potential courses of action. The first is criminal prosecution. I would submit that under your example, we're not creating a crime here, right? The second is the investigation by the department and the providing of protective services. That is a judgment call based on what services are available, as we've indicated in the legislation, and what services are necessary. In your example, again, a judgment would be made presumably by a social worker whether a person needs somebody to visit them, might need a homemaker, for example, to come to their home or whatever. That's a judgment call. It doesn't create a crime for failure to provide that kind of visitation. The third, of course, will be a decision that the complaint is not well-founded. And I suspect that some of the complaints in the category you're talking about would be found not well-founded. I'm not concerned about an overwhelming number of complaints that would be not well-founded. I would just as soon see 10 complaints and only one of them be well-founded, because I think we'll then have a much better picture of what the problem is.
I go a little bit further on this and note that historically, and I'm not speaking against this bill, nor any amendments that you proposed at all. I'm in favor of anything that will protect people with disabilities, but I think it's important to kind of kick these things around while we're having a look at it. It's been historically traditional for the Department of Health and Social Services to expand their staff as soon as they hear a cry or can develop some sort of a program that can do that. And the old philosophy from the public sector is concerned is if there's a program, there's going to be a case, and if there isn't a program, there won't be any cases. I can see some real problems here in funding more aid, more social work, and so forth, because all these millions of calls that may come in on my husband isn't coming into my room every day and staying with me 24 hours a day anymore, and I have a problem, and somebody's got to go out and investigate every single one of those calls. Not to say that they're not, going to amount to anything, but sometimes they may not, maybe more than not, if you're dealing with elderly who have more time to think about that sort of thing. I worry about that, Don, and I hope you can satisfy my concern on blowing this all out of proportion sooner or later down the pipe, and having as fast as another 30 to 40 people having to handle those types of things, because our elderly are living longer, and we're getting a growing number of them because of their health and so forth. So the numbers are growing, and the support services have to grow with that then, apparently. And we're adding to the problem, perhaps, rather than...
Right.
See what I'm trying to say?
I think it's a very important concern, and I agree with you. As I may have indicated before this committee before, the bill I filed last year on this subject was much broader, and frankly, it received some criticism for that reason, that you get any number of things that people would file complaints on, and you'd have a tremendous increase in the budget of the department, and in fact, there was a large fiscal note for it. The bill has been restructured to take that into account. I think you'll see in the fiscal note for this bill that there is only a very small fiscal impact, and that's because we're not planning on funding any of those new services. Those new services will be funded, presumably, only when they can be justified based on the statistics that are going to come out under this legislation. So if they can show there's 500 cases of elder abuse because this bill was passed, we can show that because this bill was passed, then they'll have a pretty good argument that maybe they ought to have more services. Right now, what we're getting is requests from the department for more services, absolutely no documentation of why they're necessary. That's what this bill does, is provide the documentation.
Then I have one more. Interrupt anyone else, because I seem to be taking more time here, but I think it's good to talk about it. In the past, if a physician was seeing a patient who had been abused, elderly, what did that doctor usually do? Treated that person, sent him back home? Was a family doctor? Would a family doctor necessarily have gotten into the fracas, if you will, called up so-and-so or visited or talked to tried to come to some amenable conclusion about that kind of abuse, or did the doctor, would the doctor normally have just avoided any discussion on it and let the whole thing go and Dr. Fritz can, well,
I would say Dr. Fritz certainly is the...
Some places in the private sector, I would presume that there are some caring people out there that would handle it rather than having to report it for somebody else to handle all the time.
I think it depends on the alleged or actual harm discovered and the will of the person who's been injured and the personality and public conscience, if you want to call it that, of the doctor. And I think you can tie it down any more and better than that. Some doctors don't want to be bothered with it, it's just a nuisance, they have some other interest in medicine, but they want to go fishing and they're not going to bother with it. Others are compassionate people and realize that this older person is in difficulty, and so you might try to contact the family if the person is at home, you might try to contact the institution if the person is sent down to an institution, and work it out that way without, without invoking the law and police powers at stake. That's pretty vague, but it's a pretty broad subject, too.
But, for example, if there were justifications for the turn and the doctor didn't want to handle it, would they normally pick up the phone and report it to somebody of authority to handle it for them if they didn't want to be bothered?
Yes, they would. Let's say I'm in an eye and ear, nose, and throat trade, and somebody came in because of an eye injury and discovered that I thought she had a broken radius, one of the bones in the forearm. I'd call her orthopedist and explain the situation and get the patient seen by that doctor. Is that what you mean?
No, what if you discovered that was some abuse happening in the family in the home? Would you call Health and Social Services?
No, gosh, that would be the last stop for me. I'd try to settle it anyway, but by sort of government intervention.
Thank you.
And I think I speak to my fellow trade.
We have the answer to the question somewhat in by the absence of an answer. That is, there was a study done, I think you may have received testimony on it, in Anchorage with regard to elderly abuse, where people from the Municipal Health Department, I think, went to a lot of social service agencies, not physicians, so I can't speak directly to the physician and what happens in the doctor's office, but went to social services agencies who said that they had, in fact, seen elder abuse cases which never basically were made public. They were not reported. The director of a senior home or whatever didn't feel that that was something that they could get involved in or for whatever reason. So there were documented cases of elder abuse that never became public. So it's sort of the absence of an answer. People are not reporting them now, although they're there to the extent that we can find them.
Thank you.
I only have one other comment, and this is another amendment. I guess I have to say I'm not taking a position on it. There is a proposal in the Senate version of this bill, and you may have received some testimony on the question of mandatory reporting of all abuse complaints to the Department of Law, to the prosecutors. I am troubled by that, frankly, because if you refer all of them, many of them will not be well-founded, and you'll find that the prosecutors are overwhelmed by that stuff. On the other hand, there certainly it is important to have some coordination between health and social services and the prosecutors where criminal prosecution is appropriate. I don't know exactly where I stand on mandatory reporting by the department to the Department of Law, but it's an issue that you may be addressing. That's all I have.
Just a minute, Don, real quick. Go ahead, Don. Don, yeah. One other question. In New York State, where I've practiced, it's mandatory to report all child abuse. You don't have any discretion at all. You got to do it. And if this were to be effective, I would imagine it also should be required. And you say that the Alaska statutes don't require the reporting of suspected child abuse?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. We do have a mandatory child abuse reporting law. I don't remember in what context I may have said that. No, there is a law now. I think what I said maybe was that there was some question about whether the privilege, the doctor-patient privilege, had been waived in that statute and whether or not that was maybe a gap in that statute.
Well, it would have to be waived, otherwise he couldn't do it.
That's my point exactly. The Senate bill deletes that section for elder abuse, and I would contend that that would be a problem.
So if I don't, I contend it should be in. Thank you.
I don't have any problems with any of the amendments that, that Mr. Clarkson has proposed. I do have one question, though, on the action of on reports, and I guess I'd like to just ask him again on his reasons and reasons why perhaps it should be out. And that's on line 13, page 3. I believe it was there that you said make a reasonable effort to delete that section. And I just wonder, given budgets and things like that the agency has to deal with, are they going to be able to realistically do that? And does he have a lot of problems with that line? With that?
Well, I read the new sentence the way I proposed that it would read. It wouldn't delete that sentence, but it would reword it.
Perhaps he could reword it.
The department, it should read as follows. The department shall personally interview the elderly person during the investigation, unless the person is unconscious or otherwise physically or mentally impaired to such an extent as to be unable to respond to questions. It's only in those limited circumstances where there shouldn't be a personal interview. In response to your question, or maybe about whether they have the capacity to do that, I don't have it in front of me, but I think there's a fiscal note. Fairly small fiscal note, which indicates they can do it with existing staff.
Personal interviews can be done by telephone or on a face-to-face basis or other physical types of ways. Then you wouldn't have to necessarily fly somebody up to so-and-so and such-and-such in case there wasn't. You just phone them first.
Sure, right. Although there are department employees in most of the communities of the state, but certainly could be done by
what opportunities do we as a legislature have to review the regulations that are written by the department before they become law?
As I recall, the statute, it says that the copies of regulations go to the Regulation Review Committee at the point that they're adopted. Notice of proposed regulations go to all legislators. That may just be a matter of etiquette. I'm not sure if it's required by statute. The way to annul a regulation, let me answer legally first. The way to annul a regulation, according to the Alaska Supreme Court, is to pass a bill annulling it. And of course, there is legislation in this legislature to change the Constitution to make it easier for us to annul regulations. On a practical level, I personally have been very, very successful in exercising the legislative oversight function, which is when I get their notice of regulations on some issue I'm interested in, where they're implementing a law, I read them, and if they're wrong, I go to them and I testify at that hearing, or I submit written comments to them saying that's not what we meant, and very often I've been successful in doing that. So there's an informal legislative oversight that requires some work by all of us. There's a formal procedure by which we can annul regulations.
Other questions, Mr. Clarkson? If not, thank you very much, Don, for
taking
so long
and
working with us on this.
I was wondering, Madam Chairman, if it would be proper at this time to make a motion to add the proposed amendments that Mr. Clarkson has made. I'd like to make a motion to add the amendments that he's proposed today. And Don, I'm trying to listen to you and listen to the amendments, and I don't have them down verbatim, so.
That's the staff's job to put that on.
Okay, well.
The senators and committee substitute.
If you could withdraw were you asking if it's okay to make a motion? I didn't quite understand.
Well,
I would like for you to withdraw that because it is, I think we ought to go ahead and have staff draw up what the testimony has delivered to us so that we can then take a look at it and then determine what we're going to do with that as it reads, because right now we just have nothing except hand scratchings, and it would be poor policy, I think, for us to make any more decisions.
That's fine. I just
sure. Oh yeah, we have to make
I would like to, I would like to see the language that he has presented incorporated into community substance.
Right on the tape.
Let me just add one final procedural point. On the privilege question, I think if there is agreement in the committee that some language needs to appear in the bill, there probably needs to be a provision amending one of the court rules. And again, staff can prepare this as if it's, you just have to add it to the title and add a little thing at the end. It's Rule 504, the evidence rules, for Mr. Palmer's consideration. We would be, in effect, amending that by providing a waiver to the physician and psychotherapist patient privilege. It's a procedural point. And
John, wouldn't you have to have 27 votes to pass the buddy
thing? That's
true,
but I'm confident that you get at least 13.
Touche.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
John.
Thank you very much for hearing me. And my staff is going to stay here and is familiar with all this.
That'll be there are other
which are your staff?
Jan Rice, right there. Okay, thank you.
More discussion?
Yes,
questions?
I'd like to make a motion. I believe the word willful should be on line 23. And I'm going to make a motion that in the staff or in the copy that on line 23 after for the.
On page 5.
Right. Insert the word willful.
We can be willing to, now that the motion's on the floor, be willing to ask legal services to address that so that we can from the staff report. That's a good response.
He suggested if you wanted to change it to use the word intentional instead of willful.
Oh,
okay.
But
Ed's recommendation was that it did not be included. I mean, Don had the same reasons that I got from the draft.
Well, I still, you can vote me down on it, but I would have put the word intentional then on it.
Intentional instead of willful? So you're going to amend your own motion then?
Yes, I amend my own motion. Or I withdraw my first motion, and I for substitute motion is on line 23 of page 5. We insert the word intentional after or the.
If there's no objections to that,
yeah,
then okay. You object?
Right.
Well, should we take a vote on it then? Attorney?
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a vote. For the insertion of the word intentional on line 23 of page 5, all those in favor? It passed. And without going through the many amendments that were suggested by Don, the staff, I believe, has that information. And I'll direct them to include those amended portions by virtue of the record and have that new draft then come back as a sponsor substitute, I think. Could we not do that?
Okay.
A committee substitute? Okay.
Chairman, I think probably one other area we should address because we represented Clark, we just kind of batted around, and that was section 4724075, the evidence, not privilege, page 5. He had a suggestion that we leave some language in there with physician patients. He also said that the Senate had dropped it completely out of theirs.
Right.
I know we had testimony from, I believe, two people when we did hear it to drop it. We had some testimony not to drop it. So
let's talk about that then and see what's there.
I would be in favor of leaving it in.
You'd be in favor of leaving it in?
Yes.
I would be
better protected if I give evidence or if I report a case. Mm-hmm. I can't say, hey, doctor, went ahead and divulged something that you learned in the privacy of your office.
I'd concur with.
What I would say is we do it with the language that Representative Clarkson addressed so that we're only addressing the abuse and in the course of it, we don't reveal the entire patient's records, which are nobody's business but the doctors and the patients.
Do you like that?
Well, I think that's why Don made a lot of amendments.
documents, and it's, when you don't have them in front of you, I sort of feel a little uncomfortable with them, because I like to see them. But I think that he took care of that in the proposed amendments that I guess that you...
Well, he...
That you,
he
I think he gave us some proposed language changes, which I was in favor of, and I think that was the committee's intent to change that along with everything else that he said. So
yeah,
I'm happy with the new language that he proposed.
His recommendation was to revise lines 10 through 13, but not to delete the entire section.
Right.
And unless there's any real strong objection to that, I would hope that we do as the sponsor had asked us to do. And we can decide later whether we like the bill or not and take action, but I don't want to change the intent of the sponsor in this bill. It is his bill, and unless there's something very legally wrong with it, the committee should try to keep that intent and reform as much as possible. So I am, I think that we've got all cleared up.
Madam Chairman, I want to...
Doctor?
Ask, it isn't clear in my mind whether most of the testimony from the people who would be involved or who took care of the elderly were in favor of this legislation or weren't in favor of it. You got a score on it anyway?
No, I think I made a list as we went through.
Oh, just roughly, I don't mind trying to pin you down to something embarrassing.
No.
Well,
I mean, I can go through and you just want to score four.
Or just generally speaking, only.
Why don't you do that while, if I may, to take up the time and bring up something else for the committee's consideration. On page 6, lines 3 and 4, item number 5 says, elderly person means, these are definitions, means a resident of Alaska who is 60 years of age or older. That bothers me because 60 years of age is not old anymore. 25 years ago, it was a little different. And my concern is that as our society grows younger, as we grow older, that age 60 is a very
tender age.
Correct. And I worry about the inclusion of such a young age because well, if the Social Security program would be designed like Bain designed it, they would have had longevity tied on to the benefits age, and we would have been now to 85 instead of 60 or 65. But go ahead, Mr. Copeland.
I have one other problem with that. Putting the word resident of Alaska, and you know, if we have abuse of a tourist who may be 65 or 70, that's also abuse and should be reported. If somebody somebody comes up here as a member of a tour group, and that would be an actionable thing.
I think most of these, if it's physical abuse, it probably would fall under legal law.
So
it would be the golden battery or something like that.
Yeah.
Well,
another thing that bothers me is that chronological age isn't the same as physical and mental age. There are people who are 35 who have bought the farm, and there are people in their 90s who are right on the stick as far as their minds and their bodies are concerned. That was one of the problems they had with the mandatory retirement of airline captains at age 60. Some of them should have been retired 15 years ago, and others should be allowed to continue. But until we can make more accurate physical and mental assessments of physical and mental age and chronological age, physical and mental age, this is a very difficult thing for me to grapple with.
Definition, I suppose, is elderly person, because it's used throughout this legislation. And I'm sorry I didn't bring it up when Mr. Clarkson was here, because I had it marked, but so many other things I missed it.
Madam Chairman, well, I will make the motion that we change it to age 65, which is by and large the Social Security retirement in most cases. Motion as an age for discussion.
Is there a motion? Should we take up discussion on that? Mike, comment on that?
I'm not near that age, but. To me, I'm comfortable with 60 years old, partially for what Dr. Fritz had mentioned. You know, someone could be 60 and be ready to buy the farm, and whereas other people could be 60 and be in much better shape than someone 25 so, or 30. So I would be satisfied with the age 60. I think it's, you have to draw the line somewhere, and 60's fine with me.
Well,
perhaps the term elderly person has to be defined in some other fashion or another type of phrase
considered as far as addressing the needs of the people who need this kind of legislation. Who needs this? You know, if I'm 65 and I'm doing fine, do I need this legislation at all? I can control the abuse that's happening to me by stocking them back or calling the police or taking my money and you can get out, you know, that sort of thing. It's the incapables, I believe, that this is being addressed to. The persons who are incapacitated mentally or physically that the sponsor wants to help protect because they can't do it on their own, or they're inhibited by the caretaker of themselves and have no avenue, or their fear of being deserted and so forth, means that my mind starts conjuring up very elderly people who are totally dependent upon others for their keep, if you will. And so I don't agree that age 60 is a definition for elderly person. Is there any more discussion on the motion?
Well, yes, you have the precedent of 65 years old, Mr. Miller. About the precedent for Social Security, which involved many tens of millions of people. 60, which is invoked by airline pilots, there might be 5,000 of those. So I would be in favor of 65. Just for that reason, it's something to hang your hat on, granting that there are variations of one's mental and physical capacities for any age on to any age.
That just a little further. I just read a recent article reported in one of the newspapers that dealt with Social Security, and the man who was actually the father of the plan nationally, his name was Bain, and he was asked about the age 65, and he said it was an arbitrary, that was it, we hung our hat on that. And he said, no, as things have stuck on an age, it's carried on too. Is there any more objections to the motion, or I want any more discussion until we take a vote on it?
I think historically, I think Bismarck in Germany set that as a mandatory retirement when he unified Germany to get rid of all the people who had been working for the different principalities before then and instituted the first.
What was the age?
It was 65. That's where it was arbitrary at that point. They had to fit some point. But we do have a problem. There are, for instance, Native people have a lower life expectancy in Native communities, and harsher life sometimes will leave people physically less able to deal with things at a younger age. I would almost favor either leaving it out or somehow defining a degree of person incapacitated by a region of aging process or something like that, which would leave it open to anything from 55 to 95. And as you say, someone can be 95 and not be at all incapacitated, and someone can be 55 and really worn out and requiring assistance.
Trying to write that definition like that down, I think, would be.
Well, there are degrees of incapacity which are decided on by professionals, in fact, in terms of accidents and other things like that.
Well, if we move this motion and someone, between the time today and the time we get that bill redrafted, come up with a better definition, perhaps we consider that then as being a demonstration of really what the bill is intended to do. I'd be willing to look for something like that.
We should look for that. I was thinking someone with arteriosclerosis, for example. That may be a curable, but not in every case.
Well, let's take a vote on the motion to delete 60 years of age and include 65, rather. All those in favor? It has passed, but I would invite anyone to see if they could write a more equitable.
I plead insufficient mental capacity at this point to figure out the problem.
You always brought it up. Are there any more instances where we need to bring up information? I worry about that mental health on line 12 or 6. There is very little application. Well, there's mental health mentioned in a couple of places. And it's such an intangible thing for me to demonstrate with. If somebody's crabby in the morning, that might be poor mental health. Mm-hmm. Their coffee after that, they're fine. But boy, when you're dealing with older people, they're a whole breed of cats that are different than anything else. And that is not a detrimental statement. That's just the fact that the elderly have a different outlook, have a different approach to, have different fears, apprehensions, and so forth. I just worry about blowing something up into all proportions to encompass something that you may be asking for a lot of problems, and I worry about that. On the other hand, certainly you can destroy a person's mental health just by your actions. You don't have to abuse them physically. You can cause an irreparable harm mentally by. Thank you. You are so smart. Under the child abuse statute, there is that correct? Neglect means the failure to provide necessary food, care, clothing, shelter, or other medical attention for a child. That's what neglect is defined under the child abuse law.
Read those again.
Neglect means the failure to provide necessary food, care, clothing, shelter, or medical attention for a child.
And that leaves out the whole business of mental health.
Unless it requires medical. Unless it requires medical care.
It says medical attention.
What kind of medical attention do you give mental health? A psychologist. I believe it was Representative Fox's testimony talked about the fact that this may open the door. This may mean that someone that's a hypochondriac perhaps gets reported, but it also might be so inclusive to allow some people that are actually neglected to make sure they were reported. So I would personally want to err in having a few hypochondriacs reported, because
in the review process that it would be found out to be not, perhaps not someone that needs to go any farther with an investigation, but someone that's really needed or being neglected would then come forward and they would be found out. I would be happy to go along with what Blockson's amendments were, and that's why I was in favor of all the ones that he made.
Let me take the other point of view right now. Just for the sake of taking it, up in the Fairbanks Fairstar Borough, there is thing going on right now, and a lot of people up in arms about it, some regulations that the school district wants to enact. Anyway, they refer to the mental anguish. And I think mental anguish could probably fall under mental health. Problem that people are having, what do you define as mental anguish? What may be mental anguish to one person might not be mental anguish to another person. And I have a hard time defining mental anguish. And I don't know, I just feel like you could be right opening up a whole bag of worms that,
I think the amendment requiring treatment if professional psychiatrist or psychotherapist determines that that a person, as a result of their treatment, does require treatment, then that might be sufficient. I know that mental language is something that comes up in divorce cases and all kinds of other things, but I don't. And I can see your objection very much in that regard, because it becomes interpretation or something for arguments before the court. But I think that treating it as something that requires would require treatment. For example, there may be something, there may be sexual abuse that is not physical, not necessarily in the case of children. It may not be touching, but it may, telling stories, incitement, as it were. And that may require therapy afterward. And that would, I think, come under that kind of definition. Perhaps in the case of an elderly person, it may be continued threats about all destruction of property or life threats, scaring them. And if the person is that disturbed by them, that then they require therapy to calm them down, to bring them back to normal. That would come under the definition. But if it were just enough to get them upset and angry, but not to the point that it would require treatment by a professional, then it wouldn't fit under the definition. I agree with you that left undefined, it's a confusing thought, but putting it to the point of requiring treatment, then I think that answers that
problem. The question I thought is, what is treatment? If one visits treatment, then visits treatment, then yes, I think you don't have to define treatment, because they may feel that, I need treatment for this, and they actually go to the doctor.
I'd leave that to the medical practitioner.
The
suggestion
of
the medical treatment. The suggestion was it would be medical treatment, and I would go for that rather than going.
I would also like to draw to your attention, we're going to be charged with the responsibility of putting out a sponsor bill here. And I would like to remind you that not only is this bill going to allow for the reporting of abuse, but it will also open the door, or allow for, excuse me, for prosecution and lawsuits. And that's not all bad if it's demonstrated that it's necessary. But I would love treatment is one thing, but you go beyond that, and I worry about that as being a traumatic experience for an elderly person. Certainly, if it's with, you know, if it's necessary,
I was thinking that it might be very useful to know what other states, if any, have got anything like this on the books and how well it works. Through the House Research Agency, can we find that out? Because if we're pioneers on that one, then that tells me something.
Well,
I'm a pioneer.
And then, Mike,
no one.
Oh, this Mike.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Just a comment there. House research is running about 6 weeks behind the last item, but maybe that's incorrect, but they are quite a ways behind them. On their research request. I was curious, I don't remember if there was any testimony by any of the Pioneer Homes or by anybody in the Carriage North or any of those different institutions, but it might be interesting to see what some of our people that are in the homes for elderly would have, if they did have comments on that.
Yeah, we had testimony on that.
I thought there was, and I don't remember.
Anchorage Pioneer Homes.
I didn't hear any detrimental comments from their care.
Back to Miles' question earlier, there were 11 people who testified in favor and none against. A lot of people had amendments to it.
Okay, that's
why I wanted to know. I believe in the Senate testimony, Mr. McPherson from Anchorage, older election commission, said something like 70 instances of elder abuse reported by 20 separate agencies in Anchorage in last year. That's probably, well, given the size of the city, that's probably the highest in the state. But
2.5 per agency then, per year,
like
reporting.
Something like that.
And what happened to those cases? How did they handle them? Maybe we can find that out.
We had testimony here at the last meeting that that's the purpose for a bill that requires reporting.
Sometimes there is a great deal of mutual support, you know, from the older Alaskan group. They meet for luncheons and things like that. And then also one of the volunteers, Crisis Line, has a calling schedule and also is available to be called by older people. There are sometimes complaints, some of which are unfounded, some of which are founded. So that sometimes it, I would imagine it would not necessarily be necessary, or for that matter, always appropriate for the department to undertake to follow up, you know, with social workers. But that the central reporting would permit follow up by some of these voluntary groups, including the older Alaskans themselves.
I take note on the fiscal notes here. There is going to be an impact of $17,000 in FY84 and $19,000 in 85 and $21,000 in 86. Could you tell me something, Dave? Is that over and above, or is that equal?
That's
to
an addition.
In addition, so if they're going to have this plus this in 85, is that correct?
No,
how do you read
it?
One
for each year.
Okay.
So
it
would go up another
2,000. So at least we can hold the line on any problems with the impact on this to 3 years and $21,000. That shows,
$2,500 is their printing handouts and the regulations that they would develop, and $10,000 is the fuel transportation to do the investigation.
Why do you have to contract that? Why couldn't the department do that?
Well,
Section C of, says the department shall immediately terminate an investigation at the request of the elderly person.
Which line now?
I was going to add Section C, which starts at line 21.
Okay.
But on line 23 it starts, if the department has reasonable cause to believe the elderly person is incapacitated, I would add, or not acting of their own will, or in danger of further abuse. In other words, if a person is may request termination of the investigation because they were being threatened, in that case, I don't, or in they may be in danger of further abuse. I think in that situation, the department should ignore the request to terminate the investigation. I think they would be professionally required to either continue it or to turn it over, in that case, to the Department of Law, but that would be their own decision. In other words, they shouldn't just drop it because somebody asked them to. They should know that if people are acting of their own will.
I talked to Don about the words reasonable cause here because I have it bright and I have it highlighted. I talked to him this morning about that. And he indicated to me that there are many, many laws on, or cases on the books that you can refer to as for the interpretation of the word reasonable cause. And there's a history that the court uses, and you wouldn't have to identify those. They're already identified, so you wouldn't have to add it from here. And because I needed some idea of how flexible or inflexible reasonable cause is, or how broad or how narrow. And he assured me that reasonable cause is one of the court's most used terms. I didn't speak with him about that, but that's the answer I got. Is there any other portions of the bill that we need to direct our
to and have staff work on? If not, I'll carry this over then until the next available time, and I'll call this meeting. Good. Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you have
your
hand up before I adjourn?
Well, I just wanted to, we can be adjourned and we can do this. I'd like to hand out, remember a few weeks ago, I don't know how long we had some people from the Council of Gifted and Handicapped, and they were supposed to be here for an hour, and they were here for about 10 minutes, and they didn't get a chance to testify. Well, I talked to them afterwards, and they were I guess rightfully so. They felt they didn't get a chance to say what they wanted to say. So I talked to Senator Josephson about. And he indicated it was a real good diet.